Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, February 17th, 2019. This is episode 1567. Just a quick note, if you haven't done our TWiT survey, I appreciate it. Not going to harass you anymore, but don't forget, we do this once a year. We'd like to know a little more about you. We do not collect personal information, just in aggregate. The address is twit.to/survey19. It'll just take you a few minutes. In fact, you can do it now while you're listening. Here you go. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name and build your online brand with Hover. Visit hover.com/twit and get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk technology, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you want to talk, I'm here. I'll listen. Think of me as your technology therapist. 88, And how did that make you feel? 8888-ASK-LEO, that's toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, you can still call free. You just have to use Skype out or something like that. Our website, TechGuyLabs.com. That's where all the answers to the questions appear. Not on the radio, no. No, yeah, they do. But James DeRuvo writes them down, and then we clean them up, and we put audio and video behind that sucker. You know, the show. Yeah, we do video, too. Yeah, you can watch it. But beware, you know, you're going to be very disappointed when you see it, because it's just some guy sitting on a ball talking. That's it. It's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. No pans, no zooms, no jib shots, no lower. Well, we do have lower thirds, but TechGuyLabs.com. Usually on a Sunday morning, I like to do my Sunday sermon all about technology and how it's making our lives better or worse. I thought this was an interesting story. The number one app in China. What do you think? The number one app. There'd be some good choices out there. WeChat, you know they love that. TikTok, which is a Chinese company, number one app the rest of the world, right? It's the silly app where the teenagers, they sing and lip sync and do all that stuff. They bought Musical.ly. Maybe you don't know about it. Ask a kid. Or maybe Didi, right? Their ride-sharing service, the Uber of China, right? Maybe that would be number. No. Nope, it's a program called Shuixi Qianguo. How do you like that? Shuixi Qianguo means, it's a tool for, it means study powerful country. study powerful country. And it is a propaganda app. It's from the Communist Party. And now you know why it's number one. Because if you're in China, you're not going to use it. Or maybe you will, you know. But you better darn damn well download it, right? It is the number one item on Apple's Chinese app store. It came out last month from the Chinese Communist Party publicity department. It's news. It's news. Articles, short video clips, documentaries, all about President Xi Jinping's political philosophy. That's got to be a boring app. Oh, man. We're kind of back to that, what do they call it? Socialist realism. Remember the paintings in the Stalin era and the Mao era? You know, this is the socialist realism of the app store. And you bet that I'm going to install it. Sure, I wonder if I can get it. Shuixi Qianguo. Okay, whatever. That's the big news in China. I thought I'd pass that along just in case you wanted to get a copy of that. Allstate, this is an interesting story. Allstate, big insurance company, right? You're in good hands, the good hands people, right? That's them, right? That's not Like a Good Neighbor. No, that's State Farm. It's not Nationwide. No, that's another one. It's good hands, the good hands people. They purchased a iPhone repair company with a great name, by the way. iCracked. What is it? Why smartphone repair companies have such good names? What is the other one? You break, I fix. It's like Tarzan speak. Turns out, I didn't know this, Allstate owns SquareTrade, which you may have a SquareTrade warranty on your electronics stuff. And SquareTrade bought iCracked.
iCracked. You fix, please.
It turns out, I didn't know this, largest independent smartphone repair company in the country, or one of them anyway. Right up there with,
I break, you fix. Or, you fix, I break. Me break phone. Fix, please.
The reason I mention this is this puts a very big company in the right to repair column. And this could be huge news. You know that Apple, among others, you know, another big one, John Deere, the tractor company, dead set against this idea that, you know, we always had the, didn't you have the notion that when you bought a product, that's yours now. And if you want to mess, if you want to take it apart, you can take it apart. If you want to get somebody else to fix it, you can take it to somebody and they'd fix it, right? It's your doohickey. Apparently it isn't. John Deere, the tractor folks, have been aggressively pursuing repair companies. First, they tried it, you know, in court, saying, "Well, you're violating, get this, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, because it's in order to fix our tractors, you have to reverse engineer our copy protected software." And then they just, you know, and Apple kind of does this too. They just finally just took technical means. If you repair a John Deere tractor, if you're an unauthorized repair facility, it won't run until you bring it to the John Deere guy and he runs his special software to unlock it. And I imagine there's a scolding involved. Apple kind of did the same thing. Now they say, oh, it's for security. But remember when you got a screen repair on the older iPhones that have fingerprint readers on them, the Touch ID? Touch ID would stop working. Apple said, well, we have to do that because we don't know, you know, when you replace the screen, maybe you broke into the fingerprint thing and you're a crook and, oh, we just have to do that. They kind of got, you know, a little heat from the public for that. They may have backed down a little bit on that. But Apple doesn't provide manuals. Apple doesn't provide parts to any third party. You're supposed to bring it to an Apple store to get it fixed. Even if it's out of warranty, doesn't matter. And by the way, they often charge more than the local guy down the street. I remember many years ago, before this was all commonplace, I broke the power adapter on a Mac laptop. Apple said, oh, we have to replace the logic board. That'll be $1,000, which was, you know, like the cost of a new laptop. So I brought it to the Apple, you know, independent Apple repair guy down the street. My friend, they're long gone now, Mac Adam in San Francisco. And they said, oh, yeah, the solder broke off. We'll just re-solder. That'll be $50. And it's still like that. Except now, if you bring your iPhone in, you know, it's fairly easy to replace the screen on an iPhone, right? If you bring it in, they won't be able to get parts. The only way they get parts is by buying old phones and stuff like that. 15 states now have laws proposed. I don't think any of them are passed yet. To give you the right to repair. If you want to read more about this, repair.org is the place. A couple of companies like iFixit, my favorite company, iFixit, are really promoting this because iFixit, get the idea? iFixit is it's all about manuals and parts to fix these things. You ought to be able to, if you own something, you're not renting it. Well, actually, if you look at the license agreement, maybe you are renting it. But in theory, in the old days, when you bought something, spent $1,000 for a device, you owned it, and you could fix it, and you could break it if you wanted. You could take it apart. Mm-mm. Allstate's the fourth largest insurance company in the country. Now, thanks to purchasing iCracked, I think they're going to be on the side of the angels, the right to repair the stuff you buy. Hallelujah. And here's the bad news. You cannot copyright your dance moves. Mm-mm. You ever play that game? All the kids love it. You know where your battle royale, your Fortnite. You've heard of that? You play Fortnite, right? Sure you do. Of course you do. you live in there, don't you? Hours every day playing Fortnite. Well, you know, one of the cool things about Fortnite, you can't pay for the game. It's free. But you can buy dance moves if you want. I don't floss so good. But if just imagine me doing a great dance move. Well, one of the dance moves in there is the Carlton dance from Fresh Prince. You remember that? Well, Alfonso Ribeiro, Carlton, sued Fortnite, saying, "That's my dance. You stole it." He also danced it, apparently, on Dancing with the Stars. And boom, boom. The copyright office says you cannot copyright this. Moving your arms and shaking your hips. You can't. The dancer sways their hip. This is the copyright. The dancer sways their hips as they step from side to side while swinging their arms in an exaggerated manner. In the second dance step, the dancer takes two steps to each side while opening and closing their legs and arms in unison. In the final step, the dancer's feet are still, and they lower one hand from above their head to the middle of their chest while fluttering their fingers. The combination of these three dance steps is a simple routine. The copyright office says that is not registrable as a choreographic work. Nope. So everybody at Fortnite's going, oh, whew. Put some more dance moves in there. They make a lot of money from those. The guy who wrote Fortnite, Tim Sweeney, last year made $7 billion alone, him personally. It's a lot of money in dance moves. There's a lot of money in it. Sorry, Carlton. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're going to go to the phones. Answer your questions in just a bit. 888-827-5536. Give me a jingle. Let's talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kim Schaffer has arrived. She is busily answering the phones. As the calls pour in, we will all talk tech when we return. It's the Carlton dance. Can you do it? You can do it. Wait a minute. Let's see that Carlton dance. Come on. Let's see it. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's phone angel Kim Schaffer taking your calls. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Treat her like a lady. I think Big Peeway has found the right song for you.
I think I'm going to get a different one every day.
Maybe. Big Peeway, our musical director, Damien. Is quite the expert in finding.
He does. He's got the tunes.
Muzak. Hello, Kim.
Hi.
Kim Schaffer answers the phones so that we can get you on the air. She prepares you for your big appearance on national radio.
Mm-hmm.
She's been doing that now for some time. So she's
Five
quite
and
the
a
expert.
Half years.
Is it really that long?
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day because I was like, it took 5.5 years to get my own song. Our other engineers didn't do that, but Big Pee-wee, he's the man.
Now, I just want to say, Kim.
Yes?
You're sitting right in front of the transmitter. That could be hazardous. Do you take the meter readings every half hour?
Not anymore. Oh. When I first started radio, I had to do that.
Somebody
I remember
comes in and
writing
does
that log.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then that went by the wayside.
You don't have to do that anymore.
Nope. Not anymore.
I don't even think we have a transmitter anymore. I think we do something else these days. I don't know what. I don't know how radio works anymore.
It's funny that you mentioned that because on the way up here yesterday, a local radio station was off the air my entire trip up here.
Horrors.
And I'm going,
You remember that, don't you?
The engineer is either freaking out or like, and this is a testament to radio stations not having any personnel in their building. Really?
Yeah. Nobody 40, made
40, 45 minutes and you're completely
nothing.
Off the air.
Nothing happened. Nothing.
Yeah. So I don't know how long they were out.
The
off
tower
the air,
fell over in the rain.
And it wasn't even that stormy yesterday, but
I know.
I don't know what it was.
I know. We've all been there.
Yep.
Fortunately, the internet never fails us.
No, yeah. Yes. And for me, every single day.
Every single day. So now, as you've been answering the calls, yes. I'm sure you've noted some really juicy tidbits that we can get on the show right now. What do you suggest?
Nah, it's
no?
Okay.
No,
no, not no. But you're going to spend some money. So
okay. As long as it's not mine, I don't mind.
Well, you spend enough of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Dan in New Jersey needs to buy his son a new I think laptop, but he wants to know with a MacBook Air or Chromebook will be better for his needs.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kim.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hello, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello there, Leo. This is Dan.
Hey, Dan.
And my son is going to China. He's 16 years old, and he's going to be spending 3 weeks there.
Oh, man, how fun. Is this a school trip or exchange
like
student?
A school trip, exchange student thing.
Wow. Is he studying Chinese?
He is studying Chinese. He has studied it since kindergarten, and so he's...
He's smart. That's going to be the language of the future, I think, right?
Well, we think so. As you know, once you get the idea of China in your head, you realize that it's ubiquitous, you know?
I was a Chinese major in college, and I've had an abiding love for the country. In fact, went there for the first time in 2009 and just adored it, just really had a great time. So your son is going to have a blast. Going to Beijing, or probably not, right?
The name of the city where he's going to be staying most of the time is I can't pronounce it, but it kind of reminds me of Chongqing.
Chongqing. Okay, yeah, sure.
It's like Huang. It's
Guangzhou.
Like the name.
Anyway.
Something like Huangcheng, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Your son can pronounce it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And make sure he downloads that special propaganda app, right? You want to make sure.
It's very funny that you mentioned that. So, I mean, when he's there, and this is not even my ultimate question, but so do they just disable certain apps if he has,
If he has Facebook or if he has Twitter, it won't work. He won't be able to do anything. A lot of visitors to China run to try to avoid that. They call it the Great Firewall of China. It blocks traffic that the government doesn't want. And right now, Facebook and Twitter are blocked. But you can look at the Wikipedia article for Great Firewall of China and see what the current service situation is. Well, sometimes visitors go there and use a VPN to get around the censorship. I would not recommend that, certainly not for your son. You want to honor. First of all, you want to honor the nation you're in and the laws of the nation. You don't want to be a criminal going from day one. Although I'm told by many that it's kind of widely known that, especially Westerners do this, but others in China do this, and widely ignored. However, let's not be it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm not there to spy. He's not to do evil. So we're just.
Yeah.
He just wants to, enjoy the food and the culture.
Yeah, but he won't be able to. So one way to do this, email, of course, continues to work. One way to do this would be for him to email it back to you. When I was in China, it was a similar situation, and I, at the time, used a blog that allowed me to email posts to the blog, and then it would cross-post to Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Right.
And so there, like, if he has If This Then That, for instance, he could probably have it set up in such a way that when he sends an email with certain parameters, maybe a subject that says Instagram, it gets posted to Instagram, that kind of thing. There's ways around it. Email's not blocked. That's the key.
That's good. So anyway, I have a question, which I probably know part of the answer to anyway. We were thinking about getting him, this is before the China issue, of getting, I need to get him a new laptop. And so, what can't you do on a Chromebook?
Chromebook needs an internet connection full time, although you can do stuff offline, but ultimately it's designed about that. And anything you can do in the Chrome browser, you can do on a Chromebook. A MacBook, like all general purpose computers, is capable of a lot more. We're going to take a break. Sam's coming up to talk about cars. Hang on the line, though. I'll talk to you off the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you. Sorry about that. I talked too much.
That's okay.
So a Chromebook is a great school choice, especially for a high schooler.
Right.
Partly because he can't play Fortnite on it.
I know.
That's a big, can't do Minecraft, can't do Fortnite. A lot of games won't work. There are games, there are amusements, anything you can do in a Chrome browser. And now modern Chromebooks, many Android apps also will work on it.
Now, can you edit? I mean, he likes to, do photography and video.
Yeah, get him a MacBook. MacBook.
You need a hard drive. Yeah.
Well, you have a hard drive, but it's small. Yeah, if he's into video and photography, there's just no question. Get him a MacBook. And I think these new MacBook Airs are great. You're going to want to get him a big enough hard drive that he can put movies and photos on it. A lot of people look at the MacBook Air and say, low-powered chip and stuff. I had I have both a MacBook Pro with the i9, state-of-the-art 32 gigs of RAM, 2-terabyte hard drive, very expensive right. laptop, and I have a MacBook Air also, both of them, you know, the latest models. And I use the MacBook Air all the time because it's light and it's fast enough. It does everything I want. It's even fine for photography. Video editing would be a little sluggish, but it'd still work. I think a MacBook Air, and it's so just portable and light. I really like the MacBook Air. I think that's a great student laptop.
That's and how many, what kind of storage? Like 512?
512 is probably enough. It gets expensive. A terabyte would be better for him if he's doing a lot of photography.
Right.
Video and pictures take up space. The Airs are a little bit more affordable than the MacBook Pros. The other possibility, if you're going to be in China, you can get a great deal on laptops in China, like a Huawei would be. Huawei makes a very nice, it's Windows 10, but a very nice laptop that a lot of people say, this should have been the MacBook Air. But, you know, give him a MacBook
Air. I'm not going to be around. Yeah,
give him a MacBook Air. I think that's a very nice thing for you to do for him.
Well, okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Congratulations. Obviously, you've got an ambitious and intelligent child. How is it that he's been studying Chinese since kindergarten? That must have been you.
I don't know. They had it in kindergarten, you know, and so he just
that's awesome
in his school. And
can he write?
Yeah, he can write.
Because that's the hardest thing. The language is actually surprisingly easy. Well, if you can do tones, if you have. You know, a somewhat musical ability, and you can do the tones. That's the only hard part. The language itself is one of the easiest languages ever. But the writing is the hardest of any language in the world. It's insane. And but if you start young, you know, you'd probably be pretty competent at it.
I think so. You know, when he went to his high school, we were kind of looking at different high schools, and there was a Chinese instructor there, and he said, can you, write? And, my son, he gave my son a brush, and they started writing words.
That's
and
great.
The teacher was like, come on board,
Yeah, no kidding. And he must have a good hand, too, because it's very hard because you have to hold the pen in a certain way. It's not a natural thing for Westerners at all. Oh, that's awesome. Good for him. He's going to have a good future. Apparently, Best Buy right now has sales on the Mac Book Air, so check that $200 off.
Perfect.
Check Best Buy.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's great. Thank you.
Is that your son?
Actually, believe it or not, I'm in your old haunting grounds. I'm in Rhode Island right now.
Oh, nice.
And I'm walking the dog. I'm visiting my parents who are in their 90s, and I'm walking.
City did you grow up in Rhode Island?
No, I grew up on Long Island in New York. But,
but they've retired.
They're in Barrington. They're in Barrington.
Yeah, I know Barrington. Barrington's beautiful. Love Barrington. My mom's just up the road a bit in Cranston. Hey, I got to run.
Yeah. Okay, take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Dan. Hey, Sam. What do you want to talk about today?
I was going to talk about EV charging, but let's talk about Rivian this time.
Okay.
And the Amazon investment this week.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk cars. Sam Abulsamid is here. He is a senior researcher at Navigant, but he's worked at all the car companies. He's a metal bender from an early age. Isn't that what you call the big three car companies, metal benders?
That is the derogatory term that many in the tech industry like to use to refer to companies that actually manufacture physical goods as metal.
How
benders.
Dare they?
Yeah, I mean, why should anybody actually be focused on manufacturing things that you can use and hold in your hand, and ride in? I don't know why people actually think that as being something so
awesome.
So bad.
It's awesome.
I mean, ultimately, we need physical stuff. Not everything can be virtual.
Well,
unless you want to live in Wally World,
a tank, live in a warm saline bath.
Yeah,
that's my goal. So when we talk about cars, it is absolutely a case that Detroit is coming to Silicon Valley. Ford has a big Silicon Valley operation there. And, of course, autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles. So one of the reasons we're doing cars on the show is because cars equal tech these days. There's a new truck in town. And I understand you know something about this Rivian. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so Rivian is a company that actually started originally, the CEO, RJ Skaran, who's the founder, he started the company almost 10 years ago, and it's pivoted a couple of times. And over the last several years, he's shifted towards doing EVs. And they've developed this electric pickup truck and a full-size pickup truck and a sport utility vehicle that they unveiled at the LA Auto Show.
It's got to be
November.
A crowded – trucks are the next thing, right, even for Tesla.
Yeah, and everybody wants to get into it.
And I heard Ford's going to do an electric F-150?
Yeah. A few weeks ago, Bill Ford announced that they're going to do an electric version of the F-150. Wow. They've got a hybrid coming next year, and then there's going to be a full battery electric version coming sometime after that. But there was some interesting news this week from Rivian. Rivian is actually based here about 10 miles away from me here in Plymouth, Michigan. And they got a big investment round this week, a $700 million investment round.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that's just, you know, that's pocket money for a car maker.
Manufacturing is expensive. You got to build plants.
Yeah, that barely gets you up and running. Yeah, yeah. Getting a plant, you know, to do mass production of vehicles, I mean, you're looking, you know, upwards of $1 billion at a minimum. But the interesting thing about this particular round, there was some speculation earlier in the week that two companies were named in that. One was General Motors. They did not participate in this particular round, but they may yet come back and come in a follow-up round. But the lead investor in this particular round was Amazon.
Oh, which, interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, Amazon's been making some interesting moves, you know, in the last few years on their logistics side. And, you know, they built up a fleet of aircraft. So they've got their own fleet of 767s, Boeing 767 freighters that they use for moving cargo around. They've increasingly been deploying their own fleet of delivery vans. So they've been using FedEx and UPS and the Postal Service for many years. But now they've, especially this past holiday season, I was seeing the Amazon vans driving through my neighborhood on almost a daily basis delivering packages.
I do too. Yeah, they're doing all the logistics, and it makes sense. That's how you cut costs. You don't have to negotiate with FedEx and the U.S. Postal Service for delivery,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, and you know, if you've got enough volume to justify doing your own, I mean, you know, part of the reason, you know, in the past, you know, if you don't have enough volume, if the trucks aren't full and they're not busy all the time,
right,
then it's not going to make sense financially. But if you've got enough volume of packages, then yeah, it makes sense to do your own.
It makes sense that Amazon would buy a truck manufacturer or invest in a truck. But how far off is the Rivian truck?
They're supposed to start low volume production by the end of next year, by the end of 2020. I wouldn't expect to really see any significant numbers of them before 2021 at the earliest. But the other piece of this that's also interesting, it's not just Rivian that Amazon made an investment in. They also participated in a $530 million funding round a couple of weeks ago with a company called Aurora Innovation. And if you haven't heard of Aurora, they are a Silicon Valley company that's developing automated driving systems. The CEO of Aurora is a gentleman named Chris Urmson, who was previously led the automated driving program at Google, you know, up until it became Waymo. And his co-founder is Sterling Anderson, who led the original development of Autopilot at Tesla. And those guys, Aurora has been working with a number of manufacturers to help them with their AV systems, with Volkswagen, with Hyundai, and with a Chinese startup called Byton. And so Amazon's put money into Aurora. They put money into Rivian now, and with
put the pieces together.
With,
it sounds
with all
like
the drone stuff they've been doing over the last.
There'll be Amazon
years.
Prime trucks driving around my neighborhood with nobody at the wheel. But
yeah,
wait a minute,
there will be somebody in the back.
Oh,
that
I was going to say,
loads up the drones.
Yeah,
you know, drives into a neighborhood, parks, load up the drones, send them out to, you know, do the last 500-foot delivery to people's doorsteps. The drones come back. As the van is driving off to the next neighborhood, the person in the back could be loading up the drones for the next batch of delivery.
Is the drone just going to drop my packet? Well, of course, the UPS guy already does that.
That's what they mostly do today.
Yeah, anyway. So I've also seen, I don't know if Amazon's investing in this, but there are some localities, universities, and even towns where we've got these little vehicles, little tiny like coolers on wheels driving around delivering packages.
Yeah, there's a couple of companies doing that. Probably the best known one right now And the one that may be most likely of success is a company called Neuro, which was also founded by a couple of former Waymo engineers. And they are doing a pilot program in Arizona right now with Kroger. And so they've got a little grocery delivery vehicle. So it doesn't carry people. You know, it's about half the width of a typical van, cargo van.
I don't want to see these all over the sidewalks. Like, you'll be dodging little robots. Yeah,
the Neuro ones drive on the streets.
Oh, they do. So
they're designed to drive on the streets.
Even worse.
Up to about 25 miles an hour.
Oh, man. Oh, Lord. This is going to – the world is going to look very different in 10 years, isn't it?
And it will in some places. It won't everywhere. I mean, I don't think we're going to see Neuro vans driving around, you know, or driving around Chicago in the wintertime or Detroit in the wintertime for the foreseeable future. But certainly in warm weather climates, we're definitely going to start seeing some of these. But, you know, there's also a lot of problems to figure out still, you know, like that whole last 100 feet part of the problem, you know, which is, you know, why what Amazon's doing when you combine the drones with potentially automated delivery, electric delivery vans, you know, that starts to get interesting. But, you know, something like the Neuro, you still have to have somebody home when it arrives to come out and actually take the groceries out of the vehicle and bring them in the house.
Pretty soon, GM is going to do DoorDash with autonomous vehicles in San Francisco.
Yeah, they're going to start doing that.
That's food.
And again, you know, there's a lot of things to try to figure out there, you know, as how you deal with that last part of the delivery. And that's something that Ford's been doing in Miami for the past year. With a number of local businesses, some dry cleaners and some florists and even a dog grooming boutique.
Have you seen – oh, that's great. Put your dog in the back and it'll pop out the front all groomed. Have you seen the Lottie? This has an – it's a self-driving car with a fold-out robot arm.
I don't think I've seen that particular one, but there's all kinds of interesting ideas.
It drives
the whole user experience part of it is something that everybody's still trying to figure out now.
Yeah, I don't know how users are going to feel about all this. Sam Abulsamid is our car guy. He's the car guy, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Sam. Navigant Research. He also tell us about your podcast.
I do a podcast with my friends Dan Roth, and we recently added Rebecca Lindland to our lineup. She's another fellow analyst, and we do that every week. It's at wheelbearings.media. And you can also find my monthly column in Autonomous Vehicle Engineering from SAE and Navigant Research for all the research reports that we do.
Thank you, Sam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Lisa says... Thank you for all the information on the Kona and the Neuro. Lisa says, but I'm not going to buy a first generation of anything.
So. Well, this is actually closer to a third generation for Hyundai and Kia. They had the first generation Soul came out about 3 years ago.
There you go.
And then they've had the Ioniq and the Neuro that have been on the road for a couple of years now. And then this is basically an upgraded version of that.
Well, there you go. I'm going to tell her that. This is not new.
It's not entirely new. Yeah, they've been working on this for a while.
I think she just doesn't want me to buy a Taycan. She says,
"Now that would be a first generation.
Yes.
That would be the first. That'll be the first EV with an 800-volt electrical system.
With an 800-volt electrical system, what does that mean? Yeah, is that good or bad?
It's good from a performance standpoint, and that's what's going to enable the 350-kilowatt charging and other features. You know, so it should be more efficient." Than current systems. Most of the current EVs out there are between 300 and 400 volt systems.
Okay, so will it be? It looks like a Porsche, which is nice.
And it looks fabulous.
It'll probably be really fast because it's got 800 volts.
it'll definitely be fast. I mean, it's a Porsche. It can't. They would not sell it. They
right.
Would not put
That's
the
what
Porsche
I told
badge
her.
On it
I said
it
I don't care. I don't care if it's first generation. It's a Porsche.
Yeah,
I've never owned a Porsche.
Neither have I.
Yeah, but I wouldn't mind. Yeah. Oh, well, we'll see.
But I'm actually getting a Kona EV delivered on Tuesday, so I'll have that for the next week.
Oh, how fun. Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I've driven it. I drove it for a couple hours last fall, and so I'll have a chance to drive it for a whole week now.
Nice.
Yeah.
That'll be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, all right. And you're coming out, I saw, soon.
Yeah, March 17th.
Nice. St. Patrick's
I'll be
Day.
Out there for the NVIDIA GPU Technology
That's
Conference.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned that. All right. Thank you, Sam. Have a great week.
My pleasure. Thanks. And you have a great week, too.
We'll talk next Sunday.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Our show today brought to you by Hover. Now, this is a company I do love, and I think they really do a great job. They're a domain registrar. This is where you get your new domain names. There are lots of places you can get domain names. May I suggest having a discrete domain registrar? Instead of going and getting it from the company that's doing your web hosting or having the kid who's creating your website get it, don't do that. First of all, you want to own your domain name. That's your name. That's it. And I think it's very useful. There's a lot of reasons. For instance, I have probably 50 or 60 domain names all registered at Hover. Hover makes it very, very simple, very affordable, very fast. There's no upsell. That you just say, I want this domain name. They have over 400 TLDs. That's the dot what, you know, dot com, dot net, dot org, dot, but they also have dot pizza, dot ninja, dot Republican, dot Democrat. There are a lot of them, as it turns out, over 400. And I have many. I have lots of ways to using them. Like I have a URL shortener, leo.ist, leoist. I like that. That's cool, right? But one reason everybody should have a domain name is for email. Hover will do your email, but they will also reflect your email, which is the best thing to do. So that way you use whatever email service you want, Gmail, whatever. But you don't give out a Gmail address. You give out an address that's your family name, for instance. leo@laporte.com would be great, right? There are a couple of reasons to do that. One, you own it. Always will own it. Hover, you know, is great for that. But if you want to change from Gmail to Outlook Mail or to Proton Mail, it's easy. You don't have to tell anybody. They're still sending the mail to leo@laporte.com, but you tell Hover, hey, send it over there now. That's awesome. It's also important to have your own website with your name on it. Hover makes it easy. If you're a business, if you're an individual, and a lot of us just do it for fun because we love owning domain names, Hover's the best. .me. This is a great for a personal one. This would be a great one to give a teenager because the .me address is them, right? And every teenager ought to have their own website so that there's a place where they put their best foot forward. What a great gift this would be. If, you know, .me could be your portfolio, could be your musings, could be your business, whatever. Best-in-class customer support team, no upsells, very easy user interface, very simple DNS management. Personalized email. The Hover Connect feature means you can connect it to your blog or website, wherever you want to use that domain name with just a few clicks. I'm just a fan. Go to hover.com/tweet. You'll get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. Right now, hover.com/tweet. 10% off your first domain extension for the entire year. That's a good deal. hover.com/tweet. Thank you, Hover, for taking good care of my domain names. Hover.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, rocking and rolling thanks to our musical director, Big Payway. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Line 2, James, Round Rock, Texas. Hello, James.
Hello, Leo.
Perfect. So Red Rocker to Round Rock. Hello, James. What can I do for you?
Well, Leo, long time tech geek, first time caller, so thanks nice. For all you do.
Thank you.
Well, I've got a bunch of kids with my wife and I, and we...
So there's more than tech in your life. I like that. You're well-rounded.
So we've got like 9 boys, so we record a lot of basketball, a lot of football.
Whoa. 9?
Yeah.
When do you have time for tech?
We got a girl, too.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. You're an overachiever.
You have to have efficiency.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
So, thanks. Well, so, you know, we record a lot of videos, and so I've actually gotten to the Apple jail where I've exceeded the 2 terabyte, and I'm out of options on what to do with all this stuff. So I
Wait
don't
a minute. You have more than 2 terabytes in the cloud?
Yes.
So you got to the top of the you can't buy any more iCloud.
Yes.
Holy cow. So generally speaking, the reason Apple tops off at 2 terabytes, truthfully, Microsoft considers 1 terabyte unlimited storage. So 2 is, you really are an overachiever. Good for you. That stuff is safe in iCloud. But honestly, you know, this is the time to upload it. You must have been doing this for years.
Yeah, it's built up, and I've got a Synology NAS drive.
Oh, good.
I was thinking about starting to move stuff over there, but I also want to try to keep it to where I can still access everything. And of course, you know, your golden rule about backing up offsite and onsite as well,
so
that we keep everything secure.
So you're now kind of enterprise grade here. you moved out of the home server to the enterprise grade server. So in terms of backup, yeah, absolutely. You want you always want, if you can, three copies: the original plus two backups, and one of those backups should be up there in the cloud. Right. Reason being, if you get your premises get destroyed by 10 children or whatever, then you've got another copy that's safe in the cloud. However, in the cloud can mean a variety of things. And now you're at this enterprise grade, you need to learn about some of the different choices. For instance, one way to do it's really not in the cloud, it's off-site is what we should say, really, which means, for instance, you could have duplicate Synologies and put one at work and one at home. And the Synology, like many NASs, will actually replicate one to the other. If your NAS or your backups don't do that, you can teach it to do that with programs like rsync. And so because they'll be in sync, you'll have a duplicate that's at the office that's offsite. So that would count as in the cloud. And when you have that much storage, I think that's more practical because, for instance, you can copy locally to that Synology, copy it to a second one, bring it to work, and now the synchronization will only copy the changes, right? So you don't use a lot of bandwidth. It's not going to take a lot of time. In fact, a lot of cloud providers now offer that kind of hard drive. One of our sponsors, Wasabi, they call it the Wasabi Ball. But Carbonite, another sponsor, does the same thing where they send you a big drive, and if you've got lots of storage to put in the cloud, they'll send you a drive. You put it on there locally at a high speed and then mail it to them. It turns out, actually, this is one of the insights that Reed Hastings, the founder of Netflix, had. He was in a college class, a computer science class, and the professor asked an interesting question. What has more bandwidth, a fiber strand across the country or a truck carrying 100,000 DVDs? And even though the truck's slower, it's carrying a lot more data. It might have more bandwidth. So that's, by the way, why he started Netflix and was sending DVDs through the mail for so long. Bandwidth has increased, so he doesn't have to do that anymore. So honestly, sometimes sneakernet or physically moving drives works. The other thing you should know about, you said you want your stuff readily available. There's kind of three kind of categories in the enterprise of storage. There's online, which is stuff that you can open up your desktop and see. There's nearline, which means you can mount a drive that's next to your computer and it's there. And then there's offline. So there is Amazon, among others, offers something called Glacier. Amazon Glacier is storage for stuff that you don't need right away. So it's like, well, I got pictures of the kids from the first 5 years. I'm probably not going to access that anytime soon. Glacier's very cheap storage, but it's slow to retrieve. Because you have to request it. They have to go, I don't know what they do. They go get it and they then make it available to you. So Glacier's cheap, long-term storage for stuff you don't want. That's offline. So online, nearline, and offline. And it's probably a good idea to start thinking about, well, you have 2 terabytes. How much of this stuff do you really need access to in an online or nearline state? And how much of it could be offline in Glacier or somewhere like that? And all of this is really to reduce your cost. 2 terabytes of iCloud is how much a month is that? That's a lot, right?
Not too bad. It's like 10 a month, but now I've had to get Dropbox to offload videos because I'm out of space, so yeah, I got to figure something out.
I don't think they ever contemplated anybody would want more than 2 terabytes.
They didn't plan on me.
No, but it's a consumer service. You're now, like I said, you're not a consumer anymore. You're enterprise grade, baby. Dr. Mom says she uses Glacier to back up her Synology every night. Costs her 60 cents a month. But the thing
that's a good deal.
Yeah, it's cheap. Glacier's cheap. I do the same thing. But the good thing to remember is if you have to get the data from Glacier, it's going to take, they say, like 5 hours. It's not like it's going to take a week. But it's not immediately available. And the idea, I think, as much as anything, is to discourage you from accessing a lot. So the glacier kind of says what it is. It's frozen. Frozen data. So this is where you have to kind of start. Now you kind of have to start doing some pencil and paper planning and think about how much of this data do I need right away? How much? Now, how big is your NAS? A NAS, for folks who are listening, wondering what that acronym is, stands for Network Attached Storage. It's a massive hard drive that is actually a computer. It just doesn't have a keyboard, mouse, and monitor. It's on your network, and it often has many terabytes. My Synology NAS, Synology is a brand name we like a lot. Obviously, you do too. My Synology NAS has something like 10 terabytes, much more than my iCloud. So that would be another option, is to get a second Synology and have them replicate to one to the other. They do that automatically.
Okay. Yeah, I'm at 2 terabytes. Drives in the NAS. I was thinking of upgrading those or going to a 5-bay. So that was another option.
Yeah, I use a 5-bay Synology. One of the advantages of a NAS is typically the massive storage is not on one drive, but on multiple drives using RAID. And that means if one drive fails, you don't lose data. It can rebuild itself. It's got redundancy built in. With a 5-drive Synology, I actually have, I think, all 2-terabyte drives in there. And RAID typically takes, one drive RAID takes maybe a third of that. You can do 2-drive RAID, which means up to 2 drives can fail simultaneously. Then your data is super safe. But again, if it's on premises, the real risk is a fire or theft or something, that everything's gone. So you do need offsite.
Would the 5-bay allow for me to swap out drives so I can have one in the car?
No.
That's what I used to do.
That's an array. They all go together. You can take that drive out, but you need to put another drive in, and then it's going to go through a period of rebuilding. It's not like, let me just take one of them with me. No. It's not designed for that. No. I think that you get the outline of what you need to do. I would say that probably iCloud is not economical for you if you're storing that much up there, and obviously it's not big enough for you. Your NAS is your friend, because you can get massive storage on NASs. If you have a 5-drive NAS and you have 2-terabyte drives in there, you're going to get maybe a little more than 8 terabytes of storage. That's probably enough even for you. What do you have, a terabyte per kid? What's going on?
Well, we've got all the movies we bought. I moved them over into the cloud.
Ah, you're storing movies. Yeah.
Devices.
Yeah. Nowadays, maybe less economical to rip your movies. Just watch them, stream them, watch them on the internet. That's got a lot of people doing that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little time out. More of your calls coming up right after this. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You can still call free, but you got to use Skype out or something that'll call a phone number from your internet. Website where all the answers lie, techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. There's a pretty good search mechanism there, and if you want to leave comments, you can do that too. In fact, that's a great way. Instead of shouting at the radio, which is not so effective, it doesn't hurt my feelings. Go ahead and shout if it makes you feel better. But if you really want the information known, Leo, you dunderhead, just put it in the comments there. Don't be too mean. I'm sensitive. Line 3, Tom in Carson, California. Hello, Tom.
Hello there, and thank you very much for all the assistance you give everybody.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you for listening.
I have a question that a friend and I have been discussing for a few months, and neither one of us can come up with the answer.
I love those kinds of things. I love that. Yeah.
Leo would know.
I will arbitrate. Okay.
Okay. So, to lay the background here, PCs coming up through Windows 10, if you wanted to restore to the original out-of-the-box PC, there was a method to do it on boot up with the right function key program, and you'd have it back like it was brand new, right out of the box.
Yep.
So what happens now with that restore partition when you have upgraded, done the free upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10?
It gets upgraded.
Okay, so if you had the original Windows 7, and you now wanted to put it back, and you upgraded it with a free upgrade to Windows 10, and you now wanted to put it back. So should we say kind of like out of the box, but Windows 10, you just yeah. follow the same procedure, and it restores as a Windows 10.
Yeah, that's right. It no longer goes back to 7. What Microsoft did to get around that early on with Windows 10, they probably still do it, is they do save your Windows 7 install. And it takes up a lot of space, and you can revert. But after, I can't remember what the time period, 30 or 60 days to save space, they delete it. So there,
yeah, I remember.
You remember that? There was a time.
I remember the discussions at the time, people
yeah.
calling in and saying, what if I don't like it? Can I go back? And
that's
I remember
right.
you saying, I think it was 30 days.
Yeah, that's right. But in fact, the same thing happens when you do a Microsoft Update. And, you know, you get the latest version. It will update the hidden partition with the Windows install to that version. So there's pros and cons to that. You raise the real negative part of that, which is it's hard to roll back. If something doesn't work, it's a little harder to roll back. On the other hand, the expectation for, and this is what Microsoft will always err on the side of, the expectation of the normal user is, well, I'm upgraded. Everything should still be that way.
Well, that answers our question. I'm having dinner with my wife, and I are having dinner with me and his wife this evening.
I got an authoritative answer. What you can do, of course, is make an image back. And I do this whenever I install Windows. Make an image backup of that drive. That'll get you. That'll keep a point that you can go back to at any time. And Microsoft also offers images, ISO images of all of the current versions of Windows, including 7. With their media creation tools. So you can download a clean install, and I think that's how they kind of solve that problem. We'll give people the most up-to-date in the restore partition, but they can go backwards if they want to. Remember the old, this is far better than the old days when you had to remember either to make your own, or older than that, they would come with restore CDs. Both of those were kind of, you know, not ideal. I think what Microsoft has come up with is a pretty sensible plan.
Yeah, I even told him, this is my friend, that you had commented, after you load your applications, you make an image of that. So if you do have to
right.
go back via device,
that's exactly
you know,
right. Yep.
Okay.
That makes a fast install. It'll get you right back to a certain point in time.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, if there's enough time, can I throw in a real quick
sure.
D6 versus 7?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm talking to you from a flip phone, so... I was going to come into the modern world by getting a smartphone, and I was looking at the Moto G6.
Very nice.
And I was kind of ready to run down there and buy it, and I saw, wait a minute, they just announced the Moto G7. Let me look at that. And it's got some features and, you know, a little faster processor, it looks like, and that. So then I went back and looked at where I was going to get the G6 from, which is one of the big box stores. And lo and behold, as you would expect, the price on that dropped $50.
Yes.
So now it makes the spread between that and the Moto G7 about $100.
You realize that the G8 just came out.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
I thought they just announced the G7.
No, I think they just came out with the G. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I'm pretty sure... Yeah, they move fast, these Moto guys. Let me see.
I went to Motorola site.
Oh, you're right. G7 is the latest. You're right. I'm seeing rumors about the G8. That's what's confusing me. So the G7 did just come out. That's why G6 dropped. These are inexpensive. We're talking $200-$300
right.
buck. Android phones that are very clean. They're very clean. They're very nice phones. I really like them.
So, you know, on Motorola site, You can buy it now on a G6, but a G7, you can't even buy it now, and I haven't seen it around yet.
Maybe they announced it, but haven't started shipping, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you, in your opinion, is it worth paying the extra $100 to just kind of wait a little bit
no.
until I can get the G7?
No. I will.
So the okay.
G6 is great. It was great last year. It's still great. You know, the only issue, of course, with all Android devices, and it's actually a big issue, is not only the version of Android you're running, but how up-to-date it is with the security patches. Google puts out, like Microsoft, monthly security patches now. And only Google phones are up-to-date, to be honest. Google's Pixel phones are kept up-to-date. But Samsung's a month behind, at least when I looked at my Note 9 most recently, maybe 2 months behind. I think it's still on December. And you, so you want to, Motorola has agreed to push these out as quickly as possible. But anytime they've got different software than the stock Android install, they have to test the update against their unique install, and that slows things down. So Moto should be pretty good because it's very close to pure Android. It has a few extensions.
I want to kind of ease into it, get my wife used to using it and myself used to using it. I'm going to buy two.
I would just check to see, you know, if you go to a store to buy it, just make sure it's up to Android 9, which is the most recent version, and then look in the updates and see if it's got, it should by now have January, and February's coming soon.
Okay, well, thank you again very much for the information.
My pleasure.
And again, thank you for what you do for all of us out here who think we might know something until we listen to your show and figure out that, no, we didn't really know it.
I'll be honest, I don't know anything except that people like you ask questions and then I have to go, oh, I better find that out for the next time. So I'm just as ignorant as anybody. I just am in the enviable position of being a target every Saturday and Sunday. And so thanks to the chat room research, constant paranoia, I can kind of force myself to stay up to date. It's a lot harder than it was. Let me put it that way. It's when I first started doing this in 1992, there was a lot less to know.
The old,
as you can imagine.
Old versions of Windows.
Yeah, and DOS. And no internet. Man, that internet really complicates things. Nice to talk to you. I appreciate it, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. I love this song. Roger in Banning, California. Hello, Roger. Let's get down on it here.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Roger.
Good to you.
Well, it's good to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
I got a dumb phone. I went out to Verizon.
We don't call them dumb phones these days. That's very insulting. They're feature phones.
I got a dumb phone. I didn't just get one. I got two of them.
You got two dumb phones. Now, who's dumb now?
That's right. I went over to Verizon, bought because both my wife's and mine died within a week.
Oh, man.
And so, thinking, well, it's a good, it would be a good thing to go get new ones so we could use them. I went over there, and they were not knowledgeable about this stuff.
Oh, and you go in there, there's some punk kid who acts like he knows it all.
And I said, don't touch the phone. You tell me how to use it.
Good. Yeah, because that's the worst, isn't it? That's the worst. They go, well, it's easy. You just go, and they do that, and they hand it to you.
No,
you go,
no,
I didn't learn anything. Stop.
My fingers are want to do the
walking
through.
I do that all. I do that with my wife, who's taught me to do it that way, and my mom. They say, don't touch it. Just tell me, and I'll do it. Okay.
It makes sense to me. That's the way I do.
Yeah, things. But you understand a geek's in a hurry.
I don't care.
I don't care. You shouldn't care. He's working for you. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
But anyway, my problem is I go and plug the phone in and to charge it up, and it turns green, says it's ready to be used. I don't use a thing at all. And in the sight of 3/4 of a day, it goes no battery.
Oh, no, that's not right.
On both of them. So, on both of them.
Well, maybe it is right, but that's not, shouldn't, feature phones should go, feature.
Said, oh, those are what they do.
Oh, what kind of phone was it?
No.
Do you remember, do you know what kind of phone it was?
It's called, I'll just read it to you here.
Sure.
It's called KYO
Kyocera.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a Kyocera. And what model is it? That's all right. It's not important. The deal with feature phones, aka dumb phones, I agree with you. That's what they should call. If you got a smartphone, then the other one is a dumb phone, right? But no, they say no, it's a feature phone. What's a feature phone? The thing with those is that because they're not smartphones, they don't have big screens, they have little screens, they're not doing all the programs and apps and stuff like that, they should go days, not less than a day, days with their battery. Now, it may be, did you get a good deal? How cheap were these Kyoceras?
Oh, no, they were, to me, they were expensive. They were $130 a piece.
Yeah, that's, to you, that's expensive, and it is. But when you're talking $1,000 for an iPhone,
what?
Yeah, they think that's cheap. And so what Kyocera might have done to keep that price down is put less battery in there than they should have. Part of that's because modern smartphones, that's the same thing. They don't get through a day, or they maybe just get through a day. And so the phone guys figure, well, everybody's used to that, so we don't have to put that much battery in our feature phones. Wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's broken, especially since your wife's does the same thing. You've got a sample of two now, and that sounds like that's the way it is. And you should. What I would do now is, you're still within the warranty period, I'm sure. They give you 2 weeks. Take it back and say, I want one with better battery life. I want a lot better. If I'm going to buy this junky phone, I want better battery life. And by the way, $130 is expensive for a feature phone. Most of the time, Verizon and other companies, just to keep you as a customer, will give you a feature phone or maybe make it
$30. Oh, no, no, they're not that good on it.
That is ridiculous battery life for a dumb phone. That really is. It should go days.
I used to work for Verizon Landline.
Oh, well, you understand then. It was 9X then, though, right?
No.
No?
No. It was General Telephone.
General Telephone. And
you don't remember that. That's
no, I do.
Weird.
GT, no, you don't understand. I'm not that young. GT, I remember that.
It's so Verizon, and then they went to Frontier.
Yeah, and they acquired companies along the way, including 9X, the New York phone company. Well,
I don't know how they can stay in business.
Because they charge too much. That's how.
You're right.
It's
right.
They have. It's funny because there are at least right now four big cell phone companies and quite a few smaller ones, but they all act like they have a monopoly. I just don't understand it. So go back in there and say, hey, dude, this is a feature phone. I should get more. I want 3 days battery life. Take this back and give me one that has 3 days. It may not be a Kyocera. It may be a different one.
I don't care what it's called.
Of course you don't.
Words for it.
It's all the same. Do you play Snake on it?
Who?
Never mind. There is a game. I think Nokia phones all had a game called Snake. It was a dopey game, but that's, you know, if you weren't using it, right, you weren't making calls, it just died in three quarters of a day.
Oh, I don't play games on it. The only thing I use it for is to call and receive a call.
Yeah. Yeah, it shouldn't die that fast. It really shouldn't. And my only thinking, they didn't used to, because a dumb phone doesn't do much. It should be able to last. But my only thinking is that
it just holds a battery until it's needed.
Well, the batteries do stuff. Like, they're checking the tower every once in a while. But, no, that's ridiculous.
I agree with you. A little bit.
I agree with you. You deserve better.
Yes.
That's not right, Roger. So demand a phone with better battery life. Don't take that from that guff from that kid. Well, that's how they're supposed to be. Not my phone. My phone's supposed to go 3 days. Give me one. You whippersnapper. Give me one that goes 3 days. Or I'll take my business down the street. That's what you tell them. I worked at Verizon before you were born, kid. I know how things work around here. Take it in the back and get me another one. While you're at it, get one for my wife. I don't know why. I don't know what I'm doing now. Let's take a break before I lose my marbles. And Chris Marquardt this week. He's going to be back, though, in a couple of weeks, our photo guy. So I'll just keep taking calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. What is this dumb phone you've given me? My goodness. 8888-ASK-LEO. We'll talk in a minute. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what happened there. I just lapsed into something else. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And let's go on to Gary in Cheektowaga, New York. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Leo. I called you a couple months ago asking about whether or not I should use an antivirus on my phone because I wasn't going to upgrade to Android 9.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately, I love these Moto X phones, by the way. Last caller was talking about Moto
Yeah.
G. I think the Moto X is a better phone. It's smaller. If you want the larger one, you got to go with the G, but I love them. But
oh, man, I bought when Motorola came out with the first Moto X. I bought it then, and I loved them for years. They really were a great phone. They're up to the fourth generation now. Yep, yeah, really nice. Point, yep.
The problem with them, though, is that 8.1, they've stopped updating.
Yeah, they won't go to 9. Yeah.
Well, no, they go to 9.
Oh.
My choice is either I go to 9, but see, here's the problem. I have a program that it will work under 9 if I root the phone.
Oh.
It will work under 8.1. For 8.1, they are no longer putting out any security updates.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Because they're giving you, they're offering you to go to 9. So they're telling you, yeah, go to 9.
They don't want to have to test upgrades to an older version of the operating system, so they're just going to stop. I'm sure Google still pulls them out. Yeah.
Yeah. My question is, is it riskier for me to be with a rooted phone under 9
so
I can use that program, or to stay with 8.1?
No, I'd be a little nervous about why the program wants you to root. What's the program?
Oh, it's a phone recording program, and 9.1.
They prohibit that. Okay.
They prohibit it. But you can, if you root, you can do it still.
So here's the deal. What root means, you know this, but I'm going to tell everybody.
Oh, yeah. I've rooted Samsung.
Yeah. What rooting means is you're now an administrator. So you've heard me say, it's a good idea not to run your computer as an administrator because then, you know, any virus that gets in there has the same privileges. It's a little different on a smartphone. And it turns out Google's perfectly fine with you rooting Android. They don't enable the root account, the administrator account, by default because they don't want people to get into trouble. But if you're smart enough to figure out how to enable it, hey, you're smart enough to keep out of trouble, right? Or get in more trouble, worse trouble, but that's up to you.
Yeah.
They figure you're a grown-up. So, yeah, rooting it is fine. On an Android device, it's not jailbreaking. It's different. It's rooting it, which means you're just, in effect, giving yourself administrator rights. That means you can run programs that you wouldn't otherwise be able to because they do things that users aren't allowed to do. In this case, record phone calls. So it's harmless. Remember, though, with great power comes great responsibility. Once you're root, you can, you know, give yourself problems, but you won't. You're going to be good.
No, I haven't had. I was able to do that with the old Samsungs when you could root them. And then,
yeah, you know, they different manufacturers do different things to prevent rooting. Samsung then, you know, now has this anti-root technology that people have been able to get around but don't like. But I think Motorola doesn't mind, as I remember.
No, the Moto X4s that are Android ones are rootable.
Yeah.
The ones that are Amazon Prime are not.
Oh, that's because Amazon doesn't want you to take off their ad.
Yeah, but they don't push the ad.
I know.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
I know.
You don't see it unless you want to see it, so I don't know why they don't let you root
it. For a long time, the OnePlus phones, which are also very good Android phones, actually had a website you'd go to and it would root it. You'd turn on the, you know, you'd root it. So, yeah, it's fine. It's not, it's something that's part of any operating system is the idea of an administrator account. It's disabled by default because they don't want people to get in trouble, but it's fine to do it. It's not like jailbreaking an iPhone, which is a different matter entirely.
Well, good. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead and do it. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah. If you want to know how to root any given phone, don't Google it because you'll get all sorts of sketch sites that offer to sell you software that does it and so forth. Go to the XDA developers forums. This is where people who are really interested in Android and doing things out of the box go. And there's a lot of information at the XDA Developers Forum. So it's xda-developers.com. And you'll see right at the top there, it says devices. You can even just search for it. The thing with devices, you want to make sure you search for the device that you're going to be working on specifically. Many manufacturers, Samsung, for instance, has different versions for different regions. And you don't want to, you know, do something for the Middle East region to this Latin America region phone because it might break it. So be very specific about which phone you have. There will be a forum specifically for that version of the phone. And right at the top, almost always, there's a thread on how to root your phone. Sometimes it involves, you know, getting software on your computer and plugging your phone in via USB cable. Sometimes it's easier than that. But in almost every case, it's a perfectly safe thing to do if you don't do it with sketch software. That's where you have to watch out. And there are backup programs and other programs that require root. It's not unusual. Speaking of phones, the new Samsung phones are going to be announced Wednesday. Mobile World Congress is coming up. This is a good time for people who like smartphones. Mobile World Congress in Barcelona is coming up next week, and a lot of phones will be announced. Samsung has decided to beat the crowd, and Wednesday they will stream what they're calling Galaxy Unpacked. They're not making any bones about the fact that it will be the Galaxy S10. And there'll be, as always with Samsung phones, all sorts of leaks. There probably won't be any surprises, but that will be happening in San Francisco on Wednesday. And incidentally, my podcast network, Twit, This Week in Tech, twit.tv, will be streaming that and commenting on that as it happens. 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on Wednesday, the 20th. At twit.tv. Back to the phones. Let's see. Line two. Rick in Burbank. Then you're next, Richard, after that. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Just enjoying my Sunday listening to your show.
Nice. That's a good way to spend a Sunday, I think.
Oh, yeah.
In my humble opinion.
I have an audio question.
Yes, sir.
So I have NX cams. Sony's, and in the capture, because in the past, I was able to capture left and right mono channels for two separately recorded audio channels, one with a lapel and one with a live mic.
Nice. And then you could mix it. You could, get some ambient sound, mix it in under if you want, things like that.
Or completely take it out.
Or take it out, because it's a separate channel.
The lapel's distorted or whatever, and I have to fix something, or it's not blended together. So in these new cameras, when I'm capturing, they're forcing me to capture the track as stereo. So from the CF card or the SD card, when I go to capture, it's not allowing me to separate these two channels, and I'm importing them as a stereo track.
But you could go all left and all right.
But even though I recorded them on two separate channels, the camera itself has two XLR inputs, channel one, channel two.
Oh, interesting.
So what it's making me do is try to mix it live while I'm recording, but it's just I'm looking for a clearer path or a faster path.
Yeah, you just need
in
an
post.
Yeah.
Post.
What do you do to edit?
I'm still using Final Cut 7.
Okay. So you could just get, there are a number of audio editing programs, and I think it would be sufficient. It depends, but I doubt they're mixing left and right in any way. That left is discrete and right is discrete. If they give you two inputs, I'm pretty sure that's the case. So it's true track mono recording that you could use as left and right, or if you go into an audio editor, just separate the two tracks out, and if you want to mute one, you can. If you want to boost one or duck one, you can. I'm pretty sure any audio editor would give you what you want.
Right, because Sony suggests Catalyst Browse.
Oh, no. Are you on a PC or a Mac? You're on a Mac, right?
Mac. Yeah, Final Cut 7.
There's
what I'm saying, Leo, is it's forcing me, so I get a stereo track, and it's forcing you, if you raise the level on one side, it duplicates on the other side.
The mix, yeah. So I'm going to take a break, but hang on. I'll talk to you off the air. But this is, I think there's an easy fix. 8888-ASK-LEO. More calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. I get what you're saying. So you can't mix it in real time independently.
They won't let me control the separate levels. So if I want to bring down the lapel.
Well, don't do that. Record them in separately, but record them at nominal zero, full audio, and then when you get into your editor, you can go left track or right track, and it'll be a mono track at that nominal level, and you can duck it individually as the left track or the right track. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, so when I capture it and it gives it to me as a stereo track, and I go and I try to lock it. You're saying copy and paste it and put it into a new timeline?
You could do that. I don't know if Final Cut will let you do left and right tracks. If it doesn't, then any audio editor will. And then they're just two. That's two separate tracks. They're just locking them left and right because they assume that's what people want is stereo. But you don't.
Right.
So you recorded it at normal volume. You would do that anyway because if you want to boost it up, you want to have it full. And if you want to duck it, you don't care. And then you just separate the tracks out. Yeah, you could have two mono tracks basically, left and right.
And originally in my my first Sony cameras that I was recording, it allowed me to have two separate mono channels.
Yeah, but you still do have two separate mono channels. You
and
just don't mix
it.
They saved a knob.
Yeah.
That's all.
You have to probably, double-click on it and then pan left and right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I've never done this in Final Cut. Thank you, guys. See you. Good luck. See you. Have fun. Where are you going next?
Pie.
Oh, yeah, pie. Enjoy the pie. You came for the pie. Stay for the coffee. All right, see you later. Bye-bye. I think they just saved a knob is all they did. It's still... whatever they label it at, two tracks, especially because they have two mic inputs.
Yeah.
One knob sets the level for both. Okay, that's not ideal, but set it low enough so nobody clips. And then in your mix, in your editing, you can separate those out into two mono channels, left and right.
All right, I'll give it a shot.
I think that should work, yeah. You can copy and paste it to a new channel, then pan one left, right.
Yeah, because I'll have to lock it and then copy it, and only one track will carry
exactly.
over.
Exactly.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll give it a try.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Leo.
Bye-bye. No matter what, if you listen to the Tech Guy, it's got to be real. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. May not be right, but I'm real, okay? That's what matters. Richard in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Richard.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Screensavers Guy.
Oh, you remember those good old days 20 years ago.
I was going to take my Betamax and tape it. That's that long ago.
Yeah, Betamax. Well, wow.
I know.
Yes, sir.
Well, I have a. You call them smartphones. I call them smarty pants phones because they're more powerful than my desktop.
I should get you together with Don. You could call them dumb phones. You can call them smarty pants phones. They are smart. You know what? This phone you have in your pocket is much smarter than the computers we were raving about on the screensavers all those years ago.
Oh, my gosh. You can say that again?
Yeah.
Wow.
Little did we know. I mean, it was science fiction at the time, but the idea that you could have a supercomputer in your pocket, and that the key to this, by the way, is that was always connected to the internet, to the rest of the world.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
You didn't have to turn it on or off.
It's remarkable.
It's right there.
Yeah, just remarkable.
Gee whiz. I finally broke down and got a Samsung S5 about 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, gee, you know, I've had no battery problems, so I should probably think about replacing it just for the pure heck. And that's where I ran into problems. I can't get a new battery for a Samsung S5. Only used.
Yeah. So the S5 was one of the last Samsungs. I can't remember when they stopped doing it. I think it was S7 or 8, where they allowed you to pop out the battery and put a new one in. I loved that. Every time I ordered a Samsung phone, I'd always get a second or third battery because then you never have to worry about battery life. You run out, you carry a couple with you. And they're small. They're not, you know, they're not bulky like those chargers. Yeah, they don't. Yeah, I think that's interesting. You can't buy a new one, huh?
No, I went to Amazon thinking, well, I went to Samsung and nothing. Then I went to Amazon and I ordered one. And I said, wait a minute, it says used.
No, that's terrible.
I said, wait a minute. I don't want to use battery.
Yeah, it sounds like Samsung's not manufacturing them anymore. And so they're not selling new ones. A used one may be in who knows what condition. It might be good as new because it was barely used, or it might not be, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time for a new phone.
I know. See, that's another question. How long? What's the design life on these puppies?
Well, that's where they get you, right? Because the truth is that the circuitry on there is never going to die. That stuff's going to go forever. The battery will die for sure. And more importantly, just like with a PC, you know, times will pass it by. Where the operating system won't be updated, it'll get out of date, and you won't be able to get a newer version. Software will require either more horsepower or the latest operating system or both, which means you'll start to get programs that just won't install on that phone. And it'll just get worse and worse. But truthfully, just like a PC, if you had bought a PC in the screensavers era in 1998, chances are the hard drive, the movement stuff might not work so well, but the PC itself would.
Yeah.
It just would be too slow to use. You'd have to use Windows 98. Nobody wants to do that. So
or 95.
So that's the issue. This stuff doesn't wear out. Moving parts wear out, but this stuff doesn't wear out. Once an integrated circuit, you know, as long as it's properly cooled and it's not dipping it, you're not dipping it in water, it's not going to wear out.
Oh, no. So, don't drop it.
But it does go obsolete. And that's the fact of it. It's not so much an issue of, you know, we talked about cars, you know, and planned obsolescence and things like that. Cars do wear out, you know. You can keep them perfectly and they'll run fine. And you may not have seat belts or airbags, but they'll run fine.
Mm-hmm.
But a computer, because it's not on the road, it's not mostly not moving parts. There's no reason for it to wear out. It just gets obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
And it is somewhat planned obsolescence, somewhat.
If you just mentioned about the battery, which model did they change to the you can't change the battery?
That's a question I'm trying to remember. Seems to me the S7.
That was it.
Maybe the S6. You might have the last generation with a changeable battery. Chat room, do you know on the?
Really?
Yeah. Everybody, you know why? Because they wanted it to get thinner. So in the chat room, we've come up with a couple of links for new S5 batteries. Beltron apparently is making them, and our friends at iFixit also have, because they have parts for phones, they also have S5 batteries. So it is possible to buy, not from Samsung, but third-party batteries. Actually, Old Gear in the chat room, aptly named Old Gear, says Samsung Factory Outlet has S5 OEM new batteries for $20. So that's the thing. You get a couple of them, because properly stored, the batteries will live fine. They peter out just because they have a limited number of charge cycles.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll give it a shot and see how it works.
Yay. I'm glad you can keep it alive, because that was a nice phone. Not my favorite Galaxy, I'll be honest with you. When the S6 came out, I went, wow, this thing is great. And the S7 and the S8, and now we're up to 10, you know. the 10 is going to be announced on Wednesday.
Yep.
The good news is, once the new phone comes out, then the previous generations, the 9 and the 8, which probably are still being sold by some people, will have to drop in price a lot. So you might actually see a pretty good price on an S8 or an S9 because the S10 is here. Looks like we'll put these in the show notes at techguylabs.com. There are a lot of sources. Our intrepid chat room has tracked down a number of sources for these batteries. So it should be you can get the battery you need. If you want to keep that phone, why not, right? It always irks me a little bit that these phones that don't wear out are headed for the landfill. There's a pretty brisk business in hand-me-down phones. That's what Apple noticed, by the way, in its last quarter, that even though phone sales were down, Apple was very happy to say there are, 900 million iPhones in active use, almost a billion iPhones in active use. You know, currently in use, and a lot of them are hand-me-downs. I always hand my kids down their phones. You know, my son's using my iPhone 10. My daughter's using my Galaxy S9, come to think of it. Line 4, Karen in Diamond Bar, California. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Leo. I am so happy to get a hold of you. I may have made a boo-boo, and I don't quite know how to work around this.
Uh-oh.
Back in December, my computer died, and I went and bought a laptop at Best Buy, and I bought the Office 365. I've had Office products before that, and I was anticipating an easy transition. It turns out it isn't easy. First off, when I tried to activate the 365, I had Geek Squad put it in and everything, so it wasn't my issue so much with that. But the font on the 365 is very fine, and the Office is much, much more complicated than previous versions.
Yeah, hang on the line, because I hear that music. This is, we have to break for our local stations. We'll be right back in a minute, and I'll talk to you off the air if you don't mind. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. So you're visually impaired, so it's hard for you to do the settings?
Well, the problem is I kept on trying to get onto the internet, and each time I tried to get help, I wasn't very successful. I've actually been attempting to call in for the past 2 months, and finally I get through.
Well, so wait a minute. I'm so sorry, but thank you for your persistence.
But I remember you telling somebody to write a letter. So I wrote a letter to one Microsoft, you know, in wherever they are, in Seattle or something, telling them I was visually impaired and the software wasn't helpful. And I couldn't, you know, the biggest advantage to me was their address book, the contact. And there isn't a way to transfer my old data onto that. So in any case, I offered to be a beta test person for the elderly because it is not user-friendly for anybody over 65. I'm in my 70s. I got a correspondence back, actually an email back, and they're essentially saying, very sorry, you know, we can't refund your money, number one. And number two, since I activated it on that computer, I since have taken it off and had a previous version of Office put on. I can no longer use it.
Of course you can use it. You just have to reinstall it. You can use it.
Well, they're saying I can't.
You said it's Office 365. It's the subscription version, or no?
I'm not sure. I think it is because I only paid for a year.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you can use it. You just reinstall it and log in. I don't know why they said you couldn't use it.
Yeah, nobody said that. So that was confusing to me because I think on the card it says, you know, you can use it up to 6 computers
yes.
or something.
Yes, they're idiots. I don't know who you were talking to.
Well, I don't know either, and I don't know what the options are. I as I sent the envelope off in snail mail, I realized I probably should have put attention the president or somebody.
Well, here's the deal. Nowadays, support really is scant. It's difficult. They don't do a very good job. They're poorly trained people. Clearly, the guy you were talking to was an idiot. He didn't even understand his own product that he's supposed to support, because that's exactly, you nailed it. You get 6 installs, and if you want to install it on a computer and you're at number 7, you just deactivate it on another computer and you can install it on that computer. I do it all the time. So this mm-hmm. guy was a nitwit. So tell me what the issues you, I'm not a great tech support guy either, because I'm actually not a tech support guy. I'm doing a radio show, but I'll do the best I can in the limited time I have. What is the number one issue you want to solve?
I want my money back. That's possible.
Well, I can't help you with that because I'm not Microsoft.
It's not a usable product. They keep saying go back to Best Buy, but it's not Best Buy's problem. The product is not usable. It's got some major design flaws that are not at all something I think I can transcend.
Well, they're correct that the Best Buy, because that's who you bought it from, you should go to them. They have a very good return policy. I would say that that's the first place to go. If Best Buy says, no, go to Microsoft, well, that's another matter. But Microsoft will always say that. In fact, they're not even generally going to give you support. They'll say, you have to get support from the company you bought it from, not us.
When I asked, I got Geek Squad, I asked to get my money back, and they said, once you use the software, you can't return it.
Yeah, because people will pirate it. But you didn't actually get a disc, right? You downloaded it.
Yeah, with a little card. They give you a number.
Right. I don't have the ability to say, I'm going to give you your money back, obviously. I'm just some guy on the radio. I sympathize. Because it's a subscription product.
Yeah.
If you talk to, I would escalate with Microsoft, you know, say, can I talk to your supervisor? Because it's a subscription product, what they could do is say, well, fine, we're going to charge you for 1 month. But you should get the rest of it rebated back to you, because you aren't going to be using it for a year.
No, not using it at all. I never used it. I couldn't use it.
Yeah. So they may say, well, we can't give you that first month back, but we can give you the remaining 11 months back. I just don't know. I mean, companies are not, they aren't. Yeah, I mean, if it's an unusable product, you should be able to get your money back. That's the normal way of things, isn't it? Software is kind of funny. That's the real problems. Now, Microsoft is very good with accessibility. They do have a full-time person going cross departments to make sure that they are paying attention to people who have special needs, whether they're older or just have lower vision. So there's even an accessibility help desk specifically for that.
I know, but I wasn't able to access that consistently, and I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
You know, when you're dealing with the Internet, I would write away, and then the response, and I didn't get it. That's why I went back to snail mail.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think one way to handle this sometimes with a company is to send it to the CEO, who in this case is Satya, S-A-T-Y-A.
Okay.
Nadella, N-A-D-E-double-L-A, N-A-D-E-double-L-A, comma, CEO, Microsoft.
Okay.
And send it to him. What will happen is all these executives, including Nadella, have an office of the executive that's designed to solve problems like this that might be a black mark in public relations. And what you say in the letter, be nice. Don't be, you know, nasty. Be nice. And I know you are because you're a nice person. Mm-hmm. But you should say, and I've been talking about this on a national radio show with Leo Laporte.
Okay.
And he says that you should be able to get at least the remaining 11 months back. It just seems, you know, it's a product that is unfit for its intended purpose, and as a result, you want your money back. And I would be shocked if they didn't help you on that.
Okay, you've been most helpful. I'm so grateful to you.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm sorry you waited unable to get in for 5 months.
No, 2 months. I got it in December.
Oh, good.
2 months. I faithfully listen. I really enjoy your program. It's just, even if it's something I don't know, or it's not a problem I have currently, it's like a database accumulating.
Exactly. Exactly. By osmosis, right?
Right.
Never know, Karen, I'm so glad you listened. Thank you.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's great to talk to you. I'm sorry this didn't work out. There are some really good solutions online these days, including, by the way, a free online version of Microsoft Office.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you can make it as big as you want.
Let me get that.
Yeah. That would probably be the right solution for you.
Where do you get it? What's the link?
Let me just look for the web link here.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, you could try it on your browser. And, you know, your browser is a way to make letters bigger.
Yeah, it was a font. It's very fine and a very complicated interface. It's just...
Oh, I know. And the web version is much better than that.
Okay. I used to be somebody under 30 designed to...
Oh, yeah. That's the problem with all of these. You go to office.com.
Office.com?
Yeah. Okay. And I think all of the, there's Word online, there's Excel online. Is it Word you mostly use?
Yeah, but what I really like, there's a feature in there. If they market it to old people, they would love it. It's their contacts. I use it like a file cabinet.
Right.
So I will put data in, like the last time I refied my house, what percentage it was.
Yeah, so that's Outlook. That is not online, unfortunately. That is Outlook. Yeah. That's a little more tricky.
Is there an address book that's like Outlook that I can use from computer to computer to transfer
yes.
data?
Go to contacts.google.com. It's free. Contacts.google.com. I got to run. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. Time to talk computers, the Internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart offices, smart everything. But no, and dumb phones too. 8888 Ask Leo. Apparently, dumb phones are also part of the show. Anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536, the phone number. Kevin, North Carolina is next. Hello, Kevin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, it's always awesome to talk to the original Call for Help guy.
Wow. I'm getting callbacks to those old TV shows. Somebody mentioned the screensavers too earlier. It's a good thing I worked at Tech TV. Nobody know who the heck I am.
Yeah, I used to watch you guys around the clock, practically. So
nice.
I remember them days, and they were some of the best years ever.
Thank you.
Yeah. In fact, you're one of the reasons I know about things like Linux and computers and the hardware and how to work on stuff like that.
So nice.
I learned a lot at your feet.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
The reason I'm calling is I have on occasion, I'll support Goodwill from time to time, and I get, on occasion, these TiVo boxes.
Oh.
And I've seen some more recent ones down there lately, like the ones from a couple of years ago, the TiVo Romeos.
Oh, yeah.
They're great hardware. I'm not interested in the TiVo service itself. What I want to do is put something on it like Kodi, or use something like OpenElect, the Kodi operating system, basically.
Uh-huh.
Is it possible to flash something like that onto a TiVo box?
Oh, that's a good question. I do not know. Those Romeos were designed to be streaming media players.
Right.
So, I mean, anything like this is a computer, right? There's a processor, there's memory, there's storage.
Yeah, basically, computers with great video capture cards, and that's really the mission, is the storage and the video capture card.
Yeah. The question, of course, that you're asking, which is completely legitimate, is can I repurpose it? And it would require, you'd require, as you said, figuring out how you could flash the firmware with something more suitable. Kodi would be a good choice, but it would have to be a version of Kodi that's written for the processor that's in there that would kind of understand the I/O. It sounds like you've done this before.
No, I haven't, but I'm enough of a geek to be curious enough to, you know, do some research, and I've looked into this a little bit on occasion, but I haven't done anything like that myself. I know you can throw Linux on, a decent Linux distro on just about any piece of hardware, but...
So you know of a Linux that runs on the Romeo?
Not off that. I know when you set up Kodi, and you want to use that on your personal computer.
Oh, yeah, you can use Kodi with the Linux, absolutely, yeah.
And so, you know, the TiVos are great PDRs, so...
This is really a great project, because why throw this thing away? You're not going to use it as a TiVo anymore, but it's got something in it, and why not turn it into a more useful computer? Yeah, and it, particularly it's got that video capture card that makes it very easy. The problem...
The TiVo people, they're great people. I figure, you know, it's a two-year-old piece of hardware that they probably are going to stop supporting at some point.
Yeah, there's a couple of things.
A
couple of things worth doing. One would be, and I've been just kind of informally doing it while we've been talking, to Google Romeo firmware and see if there's anybody replacing it. I'm at the TiVo community forum, TiVoCommunity.com, and there's some conversation there about that. There's another company you might contact called Weak Knees. They are a TiVo reseller. They do all sorts of clever hacks to TiVos. When I wrote my TiVo book way back when, it was the Series 1 TiVo, they were a great resource for information about how TiVos work. The thing to understand is a lot of times with hardware like this, the companies lock it down in various ways so that people won't hack it, basically.
Okay.
So, and I'm not saying it is, but it might be locked down. What you need to know, though, is what the processor is, what the firmware is. Almost all firmware is stored in standard chips. And what you'll do is you'll look up what the chip is, and then you'll look up how it is to reprogram those chips. You know, usually those are either electrically erasable, programmable, read-only memory. In mass production, sometimes these are not erasable, which makes it a little bit harder. But often firmware can be reprogrammed. This is a great project, a research project. I can't help you off the top of my head, but Weak Knees might know something about it. And this is where absolutely, you know, Google's your friend. And it may even involve, you may be the first to do it. If you do, I want you to write it up and put it on Reddit or somewhere, because this would be great for people to know, and it would save a lot of Romeos from the landfill.
Yeah, you know, the less stuff we have going into the landfills, the less damage it can do to the environment. And I'll stop here like this. If a Hackintosh is possible on a regular
right.
anything should be possible.
Right. You know? So it's, you know, it, the fundamental insight is this is a computer. With all the parts a computer has, the question is, can I put a different operating system on this computer? And so in order to do that, you'll need to figure out if you can get an operating system that works with that particular processor and that particular hardware. If it's really super custom, that may not happen. If it's pretty stock, it may happen. And different companies have different ways of working. I wouldn't be surprised if it's fairly straightforward, but you'll have to do some research for that.
Well, if I'm going to give it a go, and if I get it to work out,
please
get back in touch.
Call us, yeah. And then write it up, put it on the web or whatever. That's why Google's your friend in this, because somebody's done most everything you could think of. You just have to find that page. If anybody's listening and you do things like this, it's so important. You get a free or cheap page from Blogger or somewhere and just put that up there for reference, because that's very valuable to others who want to do this. It's a really wonderful thing to be able to do. Good luck.
Awesome.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for listening for all those years, Kevin. Our show today, I have mixed feelings about that. I mean, first of all, doing Tech TV, I was a host on two shows on this cable network that's now defunct from 1998 to 2004. It was The Screensavers and there was Call for Help. It was kind of basically, they both were kind of like this. We just answered questions and showed people projects. It was great fun. I loved doing it. Built a great fan base, and I built a great career out of it. Thank you. But that was a long time ago. And it just makes, sometimes I think back and, wow, that's been 20 years since we started that. I'm feeling old. The beauty of technology is it doesn't care. It really doesn't. If you can follow this stuff, a 10-year-old gets the respect of a 50-year-old if they know their material, if they know their stuff. That's the thing I almost like the most about it. Doesn't matter what color your skin, what race, religion, creed, or age. If you got the chops, you'll get the respect. That's how it should be, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little break. We'll take more of your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, talking about the Tech TV days, way back when, I remember one of the things we did with Tech TV, we'd go out on the road because we were trying to build an audience. I mean, nobody had ever heard of us. We were this upstart cable channel that nobody ever heard of. In fact, really nobody ever did hear about us. So it disappeared after 6 years, but we would go out into different parts of the world and meet people and do autograph signings, stuff like that. I remember going to Detroit and meeting a young guy out in Michigan who was a big fan. He was kind of nervous. He gave me a letter, said, I always wanted to work for you. And I thought, oh, that's nice, but I don't have any jobs. And that was many years ago. Fast forward to just 6 years ago, 2013, thereabouts. And this guy had continued to email me, and I got confused in my mind because he came from a town in Michigan called Holland. And for some reason, I thought he was Dutch. Okay, I don't maybe it was his name. I don't know. Maybe it was the fact that he was from Holland. I don't know, but I thought he was Dutch. He came out and he said, it's Holland, Michigan. I'm a Michigander. I said, oh. And we hired him, and he's been doing for the last 6 years the website. And the editing of the podcast, he's been a really important back end to the Tech Guy show. Really important. If you read the website, if you look at the website, you know, James DeRuvo writes the notes down. Josh comes in afterwards and fixes it up, puts the audio and video there, edits it up, puts it all up there. He's been really instrumental. And he's leaving us. I'm sad to say this is his last day. Josh foolishly married a woman who works for Apple, and she's moving to moving to Apple in the L.A. area. So he's going down with her. Good husband. Taking the birds and moving down. But he's saying goodbye today. So I just wanted to thank Josh Windisch for 6 really great years of hard work, keeping this show flowing to the podcast listeners and to anybody who goes to the website. We are definitely going to miss him. He's going to be a hard fellow to replace. He says he's going down to Los Angeles to work for somebody who's actually famous. He wants to do a podcast for some famous people. Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Thanks, Josh, for all your hard work. We really appreciate it. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. On we go to Doug in St. Louis. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Sorry to hear Josh is leaving.
Yeah, I am too. Mac and Josh, he is in our chat room. And yeah, he's a great fella, but he'll do well on some celebrity podcast.
I'm one of your old Screensaver fans and Call for Help fans.
Oh, thank you.
I met you at a CompUSA, you and Patrick at a CompUSA in St. Louis.
See, there you go. I remember that day very well. We were there so long the rental company came and they took the tent that we were under. They took the chairs we were sitting on. They took the tables we were signing things on. So we found some old boxes. There were just too many people in line. We stuck around even without the chairs, table, and tent. It was a lot of fun. Those were the days. CompUSA's gone as well. Somebody came and took that.
A couple of years ago, my Moto Pure died, and I had to get a new phone on the fly. And the Moto 5G was out at the time. And I was looking at the specs, and I said, I can get this. It's fairly inexpensive. And I mistakenly thought, why not get the Plus? Because you should have everything the other phone has.
It's got to be better, right? It's Plus.
Wrong. There's no NFC chip in it.
It's very Motorola's naming schemes are incredibly confusing. Like, you got the Pure. Is that better or worse than the Play? Is the Plus better? You know, it's confusing. It's confusing to me, and I never really do understand. So that's why when you buy one of these, you got to be very careful. And NFC is a nice thing to have because, you know, I mean, I don't use it all that much, but when you need it, it's nice to have.
Yeah, I just don't understand why it's not a standard thing in every phone nowadays. Don't they want people to kind of go towards that, you know?
You know, I'll go a step further. I think NFC was one of those technologies everybody was very excited about and nobody really has used. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it disappear entirely. And remember, anything they can take out, including headphone jacks, Apple, they will to save money. Apple. Fortunately, the Moto still has headphone jacks. NFC is that little, it stands for near field communication. And almost every phone does have it now. Apple's phones even have it. Apple was the last holdout. They just started putting NFC in a couple of years ago. But even Apple, they didn't allow anybody to use it. What they use it for, and the only thing that will keep NFC alive, is touch to pay. You know, when you're in a store and you tap your phone on one of those little terminals. That's great, isn't it?
It was the greatest thing ever. I mean, you know, and I missed it. So,
there were a lot of other things NFC was supposed to do. There are cars, for instance, where you tap your phone on the dashboard, it automatically pairs to Bluetooth. There are speakers that work that way. There were all these things. None of them really panned out. I don't know if you remember, but there used to be little stickers you could put on places with NFC chips in them. And if you tapped your phone to it, it would open up a web page associated with that location. I used to have those all over the studio. Those didn't pan out either. The only thing keeping NFC alive now is NFC touch to pay. The good news is that's almost universal thanks to Apple and the Apple Watch. So I would expect that is a technology that will survive just because people are going to say on an Android device, I want Android Pay. On an Apple device, I want Apple Pay, and it can't do it without NFC. So I would.
So is there a way to, is there like a attachment you can turn an NFC phone into an NFC phone?
That's a good question. No, I don't think so, because it's really a radio receiver. It's kind of a cool technology. It sends out a little electromagnetic charge, because NFC chips are passive. They don't have batteries or anything. And it activates the chip. It has to be within, a centimeter, I think, of the chip or less. It activates. It gives it power, enough power for it to read it. And then it has to send from the circuitry in the phone, send the information it gets, which is usually a string of letters, often a web address, has to send that back to the phone, and the phone has to know what to do with it. So there's no way to do a third-party NFC add-on, I don't think. I mean, you might get a case that does it, but even then, how is it going to tell the phone what to do with that information? So, good question.
I don't know if there was something that plugged in, plug into the USB port.
Well, you can buy NFC readers, but again, that's not going to be much help because what you want is, and the reason
you want to
get into the phone, and so the NFC reader will just put on the screen, oh, here's the number I got from that chip. What are you going to do with it then? Pay would, particular would be an issue because pay, the whole point of this is it's secure. And so no phone is going to let you pay something by just, you know, saying, oh, no, I use my card reader. It worked. So I think you're stuck. You know, the good news is the G8 just came out. The G7. I keep saying G8. The G7. G7. I've advanced.
They have four models of that, and the G7 Plus is not even going to be available in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably why they didn't put NFC in the G6 Plus, is probably it was designed for a different market. Who knows? I don't know.
I'm going to try to go to Samsung anyway. I hear, though, the Note 10, when it comes out, is that going to be the last of the Notes?
No. Well, I don't know. You've heard people say that, huh? You know, this is all rumor. It's all rumor. Nobody, I don't think Samsung has said anything to my knowledge along those lines. I love the Note. I'm using a Note 9 right now. The new Note won't be out till later this year. We will Wednesday. We'll see the new Galaxy S10 and S10 Plus. Those are really nice phones. They're just a lot more expensive than a Moto.
Yeah, I need something with a better screen. The Moto is just not.
There is no better screen. The Samsung OLEDs are the best screens on the market. They beat the iPhone.
Yeah.
They beat the Pixel. Samsung makes them. They're going to save the best for themselves. So you can't go wrong with even an S9. Or a Note 9. I love my Note 9. That's a beautiful phone with a stunning AMOLED, Super AMOLED screen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, you can trade in, but I don't know. Can you trade in a Moto for a Samsung? Because I saw they're doing the trade-ins. I already pre-ordered my S10. You bet. You bet your boots. Waste no time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the emo tech guy. Fred in Pasadena. Hey, Fred, how you doing?
Hey, Leo, how you doing? I have exhausted all my knowledge about how to fix this problem, so I am turning to you. So I have a 2008 Mac Pro, and of course I'm caught between a rock and a hard place because I don't want to replace it until I introduce the new one.
Those were the classics, the 2008. Those were the cheese grater Mac Pro.
Yes, the cheese grater Mac.
Yeah, and love those.
And the machine performs great, but it's been having these intermittent kernel panics. And I've saved every kernel panic log, but I have no idea how to trace it. I've reseeded all the memory.
Does the first line, kernel panic, for those who aren't Mac users, is the Macintosh version of a blue screen of death. It's when something's gone so wrong the computer can't even go on. It just goes, bleh. It dumps all its memory, and then it goes, bleh. It's just like a blue screen of death. And it's kind of rare, but just like a blue screen of death on the Windows side, it usually means there's only really a couple of things that can cause a kernel panic, a driver or a hardware issue. Sometimes the first line of the dump will tell you something useful. I don't know. Does it?
Not really. I mean, it all looks like most of them all say panic, CPU, caller, and it's different
and
CPUs every time.
Okay, and there's a bunch of numbers
the core
dump, yeah.
And strategically, I'm it's super old hardware, and I've been thinking that maybe the way to go would be, you know, a Mac Mini and an eGPU.
Maybe, but maybe not, because
maybe it is
fixable. The problem is it's just hard to tell, and it could be something you did all the easy things, reseeding the cards and the memory, particularly bad memory is a very common cause for this. Could be something on the motherboard, you know, isn't working right.
The other thing I thought was maybe power supply, but I don't know if
very much so could be the power supply. And that's now, I don't know if you can still get a power supply for 2008 cheese grater Mac, but if you can, that might be a worthwhile thing to fix. On the other hand, you can spend money and nothing gets better. How common are the kernel panics? How often?
That's the other thing. I can find no rhyme or reason why they're happening. And it's, you know, could be a click and it happens. But, I mean, it could happen two or three times in an hour.
That's not good. See, the problem with the kernel panic, just like a blue screen, is nothing's saved. If you were in the middle of something, it's lost.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's just there's no recovering from it. You just turn the machine off, on and on again. So this is pretty. Yeah, if it's happening multiple times in an hour, that's pretty serious.
Yeah.
It could be that there is a bad RAM card, and when it writes to that particular part of the memory, it goes kablooey.
Yeah.
you know, one thing you could do, do you have multiple RAM cards?
I do, actually.
Yeah, take all but one out. See if it still happens. If not, swap in the next one. You know, you might narrow it down to a single card. That's an easy fix.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's a lot of effort. I don't dislike your idea. The Mac Mini's not cheap, though. Remember, they start at $800.
No, I know, but compared to, I mean, it's the newest technology.
Oh, it's a lot faster than that Mac Pro. A lot faster. Yeah,
I know, and that's the thing. And you know, like right now, I can't even use, you know, handoff or any of that stuff because it's just
important. No, I like the Mac Mini, and what you're really going to get that's of value to you, the Mac Mini, unlike your beautiful old cheese grater, which was infinitely upgradable. I think it was there was slots for like 8 hard drives. I mean, it was elegant. You'd pull it out. I've never seen a more beautiful.
Oh, lovely design.
Oh, the cable management, everything was just gorgeous. But what it didn't have, and this Mini will have, is Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt 3 is basically the bus speed. So you can put anything on that Thunderbolt 3 port. It's external, but it's as fast as if it were internal, including hard drives.
Quite a few great articles on the net about how to do it and that, you know, with the Mac Mini with an eGPU is a monster.
It's fantastic. So, and by the way, if you really want an upgradable eGPU, don't get Apple's, which is, you know, well, Apple's / Blackmagic.
No, I was thinking about the OWC.
Yeah. So there are external GPUs that you can put a different card in. So as the cards get better, you could take out a, you know, 1080 and put a 2070 in there or something like that. Actually, you aren't going to put NVIDIA cards in there because those are...
No, you're going to put Radeon cards.
They're notoriously difficult to get working with Mac. So you know what you're doing. I think a Mac Mini would be a great choice. And let's be honest, who knows when the Mac Pro's coming out?
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, if it's late in the year...
Right. And remember, the Mac iMac Pro started at $5,000. Almost certainly, if Apple releases a Mac Pro, it will start at $5,000, maybe even higher.
Maybe even higher, yeah. And then by the time you put RAM in it, and you know, if you could customize it with all
Apple, you've got a $10,000 computer.
Yeah.
So I think you'd be very
workstation. That's
I mean, if you need it, you need it, and that's why Apple can charge that much.
Yeah.
Because the people who are buying it aren't price sensitive, mostly because the company pays for it. And they don't pay for it, or if they do, they make enough money from their work to justify it. They're video editors, graphics designers. You know.
And that's what I do. I do visual effects.
So. Oh, well, you need the horsepower.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you using? What program are you using? Motion?
I use both Nuke and After Effects.
Okay.
So I'm rare that I go back and forth between.
You need the horsepower. You need the storage.
Yeah.
You'll love the speed of the drives. If you've been using After Effects on a 2008 Mac, do yourself a favor.
Yeah.
Get the Mac.
Well, thank God I've actually been working at a studio. So I've been, machine for the last couple months or for the last year has just been, you know, a home machine where I have a few things here and there.
I love this new Mac Mini. We've already bought two. For the studio, I think it's a really nice device. It's not internally upgradable. Actually, you can put more RAM in it, but the Thunderbolt 3 bus means it's got more connectors than any Mac since yours.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I think that's what you should do.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do. I've been going back and forth. I even thought about buying like a used trash can, but that's just...
Oh, don't... No. Don't do that to yourself. Don't do that. I bought it. Of course I bought it. I had to. 2013. Yeah. Used it as a doorstop starting in 2014. I think Gabe found somebody who would take it off my hands. That was a nightmare. Apple admits it. They said, yeah, we designed something we couldn't upgrade. We are starting over. They announced 2 years ago they were starting over. We still haven't seen it. How long does it take to design a computer, Apple?
Yeah, no kidding.
Come on. Get a Mac Mini. You'll love it. They really did a nice job with those, I think.
Great. Leo, thank you very much. And I just wanted to say, you know, you are a joy to listen to every week. You. And I listen to all your shows on the Twitter.
Well, you know what we share in common? We're enthusiasts. We love this stuff.
Yeah.
That's what makes it fun.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for the kind words. Nice to talk to you. Yeah, I have so conflicted, as I think some of you know, about Apple. I love Apple. I loved Apple. I bought the first Macintosh in 1984. I went to Macy's with my Macy's charge card, spent $2,500. I someday I'll add up everything I've spent on Mac gear, Apple gear. I'm sure a depressingly large number. you know, several hundred thousand dollars over the years on Macintosh stuff. It may even be more, much more than that. And I feel like it's a bad love affair because it's not reciprocal. Apple, I love Apple. We love Apple, but they don't seem to love us so much. They go their own way. They have the courage to take out the headphone jack. They put out the worst Mac Pro you could imagine and then don't update it for years. Since 2013. They haven't updated the Mac Pro since 2013. It's an abusive relationship. And I still love them because I know they love me secretly. Oh, yeah, it's a boogie night tonight. Put on your dancing shoes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, answering your tech questions. Let's go to Temecula next. Dave's on the line. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
Great. I've got two pressing problems in my life.
Oh, no. What?
One's smaller, one's bigger.
Okay.
Now, one of them, my wife told me that should I die suddenly, she would be very interested in marrying you.
I can't help her. I can't help her. I'm already married.
Second problem is I need to know how to stream from my Android phone to my television.
Best way to do it, because it's Android, is using a Google Cast device. Do you know about a Google Cast? Are you familiar with this?
Well, I'm familiar with Google Chrome because you suggested we get a Chrome.
Yeah, that's the browser. But they do make something called the Chrome Cast, which is a little, it's an inexpensive doohickey. The Chromecast Ultra is a little more expensive. It's the 4K version. That's $70. The base HD version is $35. It plugs into the back of your TV, and then any app on your Android phone, and that's most of them, that's Chromecast enabled, you just press a button. So let's say you fire up Netflix, and if you've got a Chromecast, up in the upper right-hand corner, there'll be the Chromecast logo, which I don't know how to describe it. It's concentric rings. It looks like kind of the Wi-Fi logo on its side. When you see that, you tap it. It then says, oh, yeah, I see your living room Chromecast. Would you like me to send it to there? Now, an interesting thing happens at that point. The Chromecast device, which is plugged into your TV, it's tiny. It's in the back of your TV. It's smaller than anything else out there, just a little tiny thing. It gets the signal, okay, we're going to help Dave play this movie on Netflix. Instead of just taking it off your phone, the phone does a handoff. And the Chromecast now, which has its own Wi-Fi, will stream the movie from Netflix directly into your television set. You could turn off your phone. You could take the battery out. You could, you know, move to another state.
Wow.
And the Chromecast will continue to work. So Chromecast is a handoff mechanism. And I like it because that means your phone doesn't have to be super fast, doesn't have to be super anything. You can do other things with your phone now once you've established the playback. You can control it, though. You can use the Chromecast to pause, rewind, play. So the phone does become a remote for the Chromecast. So this would be the best way to do it, I think.
Now, does that allow me, if I just want to go to Google search, will it project whatever's on the page when I'm searching similarly on the television?
So that would. So now you're in the Chrome browser on your phone, right?
Right.
And the Chrome browser has Chromecast capability as well. So there's a Chromecast button in the browser, and you can cast any tab from the browser up onto the screen. So some things won't work. Some video playback and stuff won't work, but most will. It's a very simple thing to do. I want to point out, though, not everything on Android can Chromecast. It has to be Chromecast enabled. There are some extensions, third-party extensions, that will allow you to Chromecast the full Android screen. But in general, you want a Chromecast-enabled application. Chrome is, Netflix is. In fact, almost all streaming movie and streaming playback things are. YouTube is. So it's a little different because it's not casting your screen. It's casting the contents. It's actually casting it from the handoff from your phone to the Chromecast via an app that's Chromecast enabled, if that makes sense. But you can cast your phone screen if you want. There are ways to do that as well.
Well, that's great. Well, that was my biggest problem in life, so I really appreciate you calling that.
And if your wife wants to send me pictures, all I can say is don't. Because my wife will see it, and then I'm in trouble.
Don't be hasty. She's good looking, and she's rich.
Oh, well, that's a different matter. She can be my Pokemon Go friend if she wants. That's about all I can offer. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Leo.
All right. Have a good one. Take care. Yeah, Chromecast is a great technology, and they're cheap. If you just have an HD TV, $35. I put them on all my TVs. It's when you go to 4K, it starts to get a little bit more expensive. It's very cool. It's a very cool concept, I think. Very different than what Apple does. Apple's AirPlay, and by the way, starting this year, almost every TV is going to have AirPlay built into it, sends the contents of the device to the TV. So you have to play back the video or movie or TV or stream or song or whatever on your Apple device to the TV and keep it playing. You can't turn the device off. You can't start doing other things. You got to keep it playing. So that's a very different way of doing it. Your AirPlay is streaming from the device to the TV. Chromecast is a handoff. The Chromecast does the work. The little Chromecast dongle does the work. Oh, I think it's the last call of the day. I hate it when that happens. Jerry in Hatfield, PA. Hello, Jerry.
Hello, Leo. I've got a strange question for you.
Okay.
So I go to trivia, and we play trivia on a local watering hole, and one team keeps winning all the time.
Oh, those cheaters. You think they're Googling the answers?
I think they're using a Google Watch or an Android Watch to get the answers on their wrist.
Oh, those cheaters.
Well, the guy says if you see your phone out, you're going to be disconnected.
But you could use a watch. I could use an Apple Watch, too.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that they have their phone there listening to the music, and then it pops up the title of their watch.
You'd have to be – here's what you do. Well, listen to the music. Oh, so like one of the things they're very good at is hearing the song and then naming it.
Right.
If they have an Android phone, like my Google Pixel, they don't even have to do anything. My Google Pixel on the front will just pop up the name of the song that's playing right now. But do they allow the people to have phones on the table?
No, they could put it in their pocket and still hear the...
But they'd have to look at it. They'd have to look... Oh, you're thinking the watch could tell them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably true. They should tell the quiz master, people have to put their watches in their pockets too. Because you can also, with an Apple Watch or a Google Watch, you can press the button. You don't have to say, hey, Siri. You could just press the button and repeat the question. Well, how high is Mount Kilimanjaro? How high is Mount Kilimanjaro? And then Siri will tell you.
Gotcha, yeah.
So that would be absolutely a way to cheat. Nowadays, in college, if you go to an exam, you can't bring your phone or your watch in.
Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, you can't.
You know, they win all the time. You know, and
they may just be really smart.
And I have an 80% on geek trivia. I have an 80%.
Oh, well, you may be. You know what? Tell the quiz master, just this once, let's see if they put their watches in their pockets. Let's see how well they do. And if they don't win, busted. You got them.
And they always wear long-sleeve shirts so you can't see them.
Oh, those sneaks. You know, computers have ruined a lot of games. Chess, big problem with cheating these days. And now trivia. My goodness. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.